Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Please welcome to the show this evening, Lorna Joy Shashinda.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
As we step into the world of interpretation of signs, superstitions, and omens, one must begin to wonder whether or not this has been going on for a very, very long time. My guest this evening comes from a family line who was very much into and involved with interpretations of signs and omens. Lorna Joy Shashinda's great-grandfather and his wife, who lived in Missouri, experienced miraculous healing in 1899 and went on to become healers and teachers themselves. In the year 1899, her paternal great-grandfather, A.C. Swain, and his second wife, Minnie Mae Swain, were healed at the Weltmer Institute of Suggestive Therapeutics in Nevada, Missouri. Prior to that healing, Minnie Mae was actually near death. Sidney Weltner used a form of hypnotic and suggestive therapy that included laying of the hands on a person's body. Of course, back then there were many different spiritual practices arising, many healing methods, and some that had more merit than others. But as we turn to my guest, Lorna Joy Shashinda, she is the creator of Joyful Pendulums, which are powerful tools for transformation. Her pendulums are widely praised as being particularly sensitive and powerful, and are accessible and useful for novices and experienced practitioners alike. Lorna creates her pendulums through a process called energetic dialogue with the components of the pendulums and the non-physical world united together. She has created a unique design that allows for a variety of hand positions with an eye toward beauty, stress-free use, and heightened sensitivity. Lorna grew up in a home where telepathy, ESP, and precognition were accepted as the norm and were enjoyed as part of everyday life. She comes from a long line of healers, both formally trained and homegrown. Along her path, she developed relationships with her guides and with a group she refers to as the team, headed by four archangels. Lorna Joy is a gifted interpreter of oracle cards, symbols, patterns, dreams, and words. She is clairaudient, clairsentient, claircognizant, and also clairvoyant. Please welcome my special guest this evening, Lorna Joy Shashinda. Well, good evening, Lorna, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hi, Kelly. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's good to see you again. Lorna and I met at a conference a few months back in Washington, and that was actually a very interesting time and experience at this conference, and meeting you too has turned out to be a real joy in my life. So on that note, all good things come no matter where you are. And we're going to go into a big discussion tonight. As you heard in the introduction, we have a number of topics that we're going to cover, and so we're going to get right at it in just a second here. So, Lorna, one of the things that I do in establishing a foundation with my guests is we like to know where it kind of all started and came from for you, and that's going to start as our base, and then we're just going to move it from there. So, when did you first notice
that you can recall that you were either gifted or had experiences along that line?
Well, a couple things. One, I can't actually recall, but my mother documented it. When I was 3 years and 9 months old, there was a ledger that she and my dad were, they just keep little notes about what things that happened and what the kids said. So I'm 3 years, 9 months old, and I say to her about my cousin Carol, who's 2 years older than I remember when Carol was up in heaven with me. And I just discovered that ledger a few years ago. My mom passed almost a decade ago, but that was so affirming because I've always wondered, what is it that kids remember from before they incarnated on this plane? What do they remember? Do they remember? And that gave me the answer. So clearly I knew something at that point. I also apparently refused to eat angel food cake with a fork. And I told her that's because angels live in heaven, not a house, and they don't use forks. So, you know, I was speaking from, I guess, remembering heaven and angels. And you know, we were raised Methodist. So that was my paradigm, my frame of reference. I do remember what could have been a prophetic vision or prophetic dream when I was still in a crib. I've always seen this in my mind, and I know it's a very clear memory, looking out through the crib rails, and the room was really kind of grainy, like it might be near dawn or at dusk. And there was it, what I saw was a water heater in the corner of the room, and it terrified me. And it just, in preparing for this conversation with you, I've been doing a lot of thinking back over my life and, you know, pulling up interesting data points. And our family had a music store for 45 years. And then after my dad died, my mom ran it and then at a certain point retired. And so we then rented out the building, and our tenant, some blessed child of God, decided that the water heater closet was a good place to store paper goods, and they burned down the building except for the concrete walls. And so I'm wondering if seeing that water heater at that early age was a premonition of this huge, huge trauma that happened to our family. And so that there was that. When I was maybe 8 or 9, many summers I would go out and visit my granny who lived in the eastern farmlands of New Mexico. And I had a little pendant of the Virgin Mary, which I assume I got from my one uncle who was a Jesuit. And I remember sitting there and playing with different spices and this Virgin Mary. And who knows what I was doing, but I was playing at something with energy. Mm-hmm. Growing up, we've always been telepathic in the family and enjoyed it, and sort of it happened and it was humorous and interesting to note. And we'd say, you know, precognition strikes again. And mm-hmm. So that's always been a part of things.
Let me jump in here. I'm gonna start asking a couple of questions here. Yeah. Lots of questions with all these elements. So let's go back to, I want to go back to this water heater thing. So was it physically there, or did you see in your mind's eye, did you see something that used to be there?
Neither one. There was not a water heater in my room. There never had been a water heater in my room. The water heater in the house was in a different location. So it was a dream, a vision, a something. But I saw, my visual recollection is looking through the bars of the crib, mm-hmm. and seeing that in the corner of the room.
Interesting.
Being let's terrified.
Talk, let's, yeah, well, I would be too, especially if it's something that you weren't seeing every day, you know.
Right.
Let's talk a little bit about precognition just for a second. Now, I am prone to having precognitive warning dreams. I've had them all my life. Lately, though, as life settled down a little bit, for me. I don't have actually as many as I used to because my stresses have changed in my life. But when we talk about precognition and stuff like that, do you dream? Do you have visions in your dream that that either come true or show themselves days from now, or things that are warning you? What happens with you?
It's not in dreams. It's in waking life. And often it feels like I'll notice something. We have a dock here with boats, their boats on it. And mm-hmm. I might all of a sudden notice one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned that I have to say something when I notice something, or I have to do something about it, because I can't just ignore it, because when I have ignored it, there's been a problem that's happened. So yeah, it just feels like a noticing or a knowing of mm-hmm. it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think of another example, but that's the way I would describe it.
So does that happen periodically, or does that happen a lot? I mean, when I go through situations like that, although mine are, I have once in a while, I guess, have had, precognition outside of having a dream, and something that I would just take notice of all of a sudden and don't know why I'm taking notice of it, and then something associates with it later on. Very rarely, but would you find that some of these observations that you have are, or a knowing? I like that, because that's how I refer to it. You just know. You know,
as you were talking, that's the word I was thinking of. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And also, I know in other podcasts, you've mentioned your ability to win at casino machines. Mm-hmm. And I have that knowing with certain raffles and drawings. And the early one of that was, I was a Brownie Girl Scout, and there was some little social gathering and they were having raffles. And at that time, so this was, late 60s, the little China animal sets with the two big ones, the two little ones, were very popular. Mm-hmm. And there were several of them there as prizes. One was elephants, one was cats, and there were separate prizes. And I remember looking at those and saying, well, that one's mine and that one's mine.
Mm-hmm.
And then, they drew my names, and
And tell us a little bit about this pony, and I'm gonna grab something here before I start coughing. But I want you to share the story about the pony, because it's just so classic, So go ahead on that.
Yeah. So when I was again, probably 7, 8, 9, something like that. Mm-hmm. We lived in California, but we went to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and one of the things we did was went to a rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad bought a ticket for the raffle for the Shetland pony. And so we won a Shetland pony, which, what do you do with it?
Put every
it in the car,
kid's dream.
There. Yeah, so it did come back to California with us, and we weren't really horse people, so, but we enjoyed it. But yeah, that was pretty crazy. And then just other times that I've known I was going to win a drawing or raffle, if I want to, I can want all I want, but sometimes it's just a knowing. Yep.
My when I was my husband was telling me when he was younger that he won some kind of a gun at the age of 3, how everyone wants to put their names in of every family member so they can win something, but when a 3-year-old is winning a rifle, it's just kind of like, oh, okay, I don't know if that was really a annoying or a coincidence there, but it is interesting. So, we have a lot of things that happen to us when we're younger, but we pass them off because we're busy, we're distracted with other things, and a lot of times when you're younger, you're not putting the dots together you might when you get older and you start looking back. And I know a lot of people that are listening to this program, whether tonight or other programs that I do, have probably come down to that realization that they haven't had time to look back. They haven't had time to connect the dots and stuff. And so tell us a little bit about one of the things that I find very interesting. And then, of course, if I start coughing, I'm sorry, everybody. But for some reason, out of all my shows, this is the one I need to cough at. I'm going to try to soothe it with something. And I apologize for putting a lifesaver in my mouth, but I need something to calm my throat down. Lorna, tell us a little bit about there are occurrences that happen regarding things appearing and disappearing. And I have had that happen a good handful of times, in not just in certain situations. I've been in many houses that where I've lived that this stuff has happened, and then all of a sudden the stuff just reappears. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to let you take the wheel on this one. But tell us a little bit about this apporting and deporting of things that come and go.
Right. Well, just recently, the other night, we go to a folk dance group in Port Townsend, which Washington, which is near us. And my husband has a doctor's medical bag that he always brings with us. And it's got various, it's basically his purse. We don't call it that, but he keeps different things in it. Mm-hmm. And there was, supposedly there was a notebook in there, a small notebook, and a hairbrush. And they're always in there. And it was out in the truck, and we were inside, and I needed a piece of paper, and he offered to go look for the notebook. And so he did, and he basically pulled everything out of that kit, and it wasn't there. So he came back and told me it wasn't there. And then later, I wanted to get the hairbrush. And so I went out, dug through the kit. Hairbrush wasn't there. The hairbrush is always there.
Right.
And then later, when we came home, took the, you know, takes the kit, keeps it upstairs, and opened it up, and the hairbrush and the notepad were there.
Mm-hmm.
But the coolest story is we moved up to here to Washington State several years ago. And we still had things in storage in California. So about a year ago, we made our last trip down there, and we had a really big rented box truck. Mm-hmm. So we stopped at a truck stop, and he went in to get some snacks, use the restroom, wash his hands. He came back to me. I was waiting in the truck, and he came back with coffee. He was handing me the coffee. He said, "Oh my God, my ring." And his wedding ring was gone. And he went back and looked and looked and looked and talked to people, and nobody could find it. I went back and I asked the manager of, it was a really big truck stop as they can be. And I said to the manager, "Would it be okay if I went in the men's room and looked through the trash? I know it sounds weird, but..." And he went and looked, and he dug through the trash. Nobody could find this ring. And so it was what it was. There was nothing to do. And we just, you know, reaffirmed our love, and, you know, we'd get another ring, and that would be it. Mm-hmm. So the next day, we had stopped at a rest stop, and in the back of the truck, we had a little personal hygiene station, you know, water jugs and towels and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And my husband had gone back there, and he always wears a hat. He was wearing a cap during this journey. And so he, you know, he stripped down and taken his cap off and washed himself up and went to put the cap back on. And the ring was sitting right in the middle of the upturned cap.
Hmm.
And it had not, that cap had been on and off his head 24 times between when the ring got lost, mm-hmm, and when it showed up in the cap. And chances are, in the restroom of the truck stop, he didn't take his cap off.
Mm-hmm.
It's something I would do. I'd take my hat off, I'd put the ring in the hat, but that's, trust me, he wouldn't do that. That's a girl thing.
Where do you think this?
Yeah, so that was the most dramatic.
Where do you think all this comes from? Where do you think it's going? Who do you think is taking this stuff and returning it? Do you have any? Any ideas on that?
My feeling is that there are parallel timelines And sometimes things just wink from one side to the other. And I've used that metaphor. This is something anyone can use. If things aren't going the way you would like them to go, or even just if our mood is kind of wonky, just envisioning parallel tracks, you know, two parallel universes, two parallel you sitting in your room, and I will physically stand up, say, okay, I'm on this path right here, and I'll just take a step to the side onto another track, and it kind of resets things. So I really think that we've got a lot of parallel universes going on at the same time, and it just, things wink from one to the other and then come back. It could be angels and spirits saying hello. There are a lot of things I experience that I'm not sure of the why or what. There are the reasons behind, but I just enjoy them. They're fun.
So, I mean, I can add to your story regarding some of the things that have happened with me. So in another house that I lived in, that, you know, I've haunted all these houses basically that I live in. But, and I blame this one on some apparition, because I kind of knew that, or my husband and I kind of knew that what was in that house involved the axe murdering of a family across the room.
Gosh.
Yeah, this was back in the Civil War days. And again, I apologize, people, I'm sucking on a lifesaver here, but I'm trying to save my voice for you. Back in the Civil War days, there was a family that lived across the road. It's kind of a farm property. And he went crazy and he axed his wife and three children. Now, I don't really know what their names were or the ages, but I learned of this through a gentleman that came over to clean our fireplace when we first moved into the house. I wanted everything clean. And so he was telling me this story. And then all of a sudden, things started to connect the dots with some of the weird things that were happening in the house. And everyone knows I'm a beacon. Okay. So What happened was, I was upstairs and I needed to run an errand quick, and I needed to get there before it closed. And I forgot my, it was like a kind of like a passport pouch. I usually wear it over my head. You know, it's nice and easy. And I ran downstairs and I said to my husband, I need to go to this get there before they close. I go, oh, darn. I left my pouch upstairs, ran back upstairs, couldn't find it. And I don't, anyone who knows me knows that everything's in its place. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I looked and looked and I said, and then I panicked. I said, I got to get to this place. Okay. So long story short, we go on a search, go back up into the room and Where it was found. So I put a blanket over my chair seat, because it's just more comfortable. And just peeking out were the strings, the strap that goes around the head for the passport pouch, just barely peeking out from the blanket that I had over the chair seat. And I looked at it and I thought, well, what on earth, how did it get down there? And so I have a picture of this in one of my books. Of it's sketched, it's a sketch, but it shows me standing there puzzled as my husband is like, we're looking at this thing underneath the chair. That was probably my first obvious one. But things that have happened in this house involved pills. Okay, so my brother stayed over once, and he accidentally dropped one of his medication pills, but he couldn't find it. It was just like, where on earth did it go? You know? So he told me that if I ever found a pill or whatever, that it was his, and just to throw it away. Well, interestingly enough, I had stuff on the bed, but I'm very detailed. I notice everything. And so when I picked up this one box that I had sitting on the bed, here's the pill sitting right there. But that wasn't the only pill. I was taking a pill in another room, in our master bedroom. And what had happened there is, you know how you just try and throw it in your mouth? Well, I missed.
Right.
Okay, so where's the pill? Okay, I missed. But it's dark enough to be found against the colors that I have in there. There's just no way I would not have seen it. Couldn't see it. How many months later, 2-3 months later, very strange. The pill, I believe it or not, once again, I had my pajamas, my PJs, lying on top of the bed. And I pulled my PJs back, and just right where I, on top of the bed where I lie down, where I normally would have, there it was sitting right there. Now, keep in mind, that was like 3 months later. The covers go whoosh and whoosh and whoosh and whoosh.
Right.
And so there, it would have gone flying in any other circumstances. But I can't get over the fact that when things do go missing, and by the way, my husband's cousin, her sister was murdered, and she's still earthbound because she shows up and she does all kinds of things. She likes to take out of her sister's purse, the cousin's purse, perfumes and this and that and whatever. And then she's in there, digging in there, trying to figure out where this stuff is. It's not there. And then a few days later, when she says, bring that back, it gets returned and it's put right back into the purse. Isn't that just the craziest stuff you've ever heard?
It is. And when I can't find something, when it's winked out into another universe, that's just what I say. I will ask my husband, who's quite gifted in many ways, and I'll say, you know, I'm looking for such and such. Would you please make it come back?
Yeah.
And or could you help me find it? Sometimes he needs to look for it, but more often than not, just the threat, humorous threat of him coming to look for you, is enough to make the thing just show up. And it will be something that, again, it's in a very obvious place. I would have seen it, or I already looked there.
Yeah.
So he's very helpful that way.
Yeah. And so when we all think we're losing our minds, like, well, I just had it here a minute ago and whatever. Sometimes I don't know. I blame mine on apparitions, or like you say, you know, slice the air and maybe there's a parallel universe or dimension that all of a sudden it falls into. But isn't it interesting, though, when it gets returned, it ends up in a place that, you know, that it's usually hiding under something where you, and people are like, well, maybe you put the box down and it was already sitting there. No, it wasn't already sitting there. That's the whole point. It's right. Like it was never there. But isn't it interesting how they know, peekaboo, there it is. So very interesting.
Especially on your bed after all those months of changing sheets and in and out.
Wishing it back. It would have flown across the room. The way I pull my covers back, you know, at night, that baby's flying, you know. So, yeah, it's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about signs and omens, because, you know, there's a lot of people that do believe in signs and that they are associated with people that they love and everything. And so why don't I have you kind of have a discussion a little bit about what you think about signs and omens?
Sure. Well, I mean, a basic superstition might be, or something like that, that we've always had in our family is if you find a penny on the ground, it's good luck.
Yes.
And in my mother's later years, she informed me that no, it has to be heads up or it's not good luck. And I thought, well, what the heck?
Yeah.
All my life, I haven't known of this distinction. So now whenever I see a penny that's tails up, so it, according to what she told me in her later years, that would not be good luck. I kind of see that as part of that little joke. But I do get omens. It's sort of a trite one, but feathers, especially white feathers. After my mother had passed, I was having lunch with a woman who's been actually part of our family longer than I have been alive on this plane. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about my mom, who she loved dearly. And we're sitting outside, and just this white feather comes floating down by the table where we're sitting. So white feathers, hummingbirds. We don't have a feeder. We have very few hummingbirds, but once in a while, one will come and just sit right in front of me. And, you know, I'll say, hi, Mom. As I was preparing to have this conversation with you, I was thinking a lot about various things. And as I was thinking about signs and omens, for a few days, I went to the grocery store and I was putting things back in the car and looked over, and there's a white feather. Mm-hmm. Now, we have a lot of birds here in the Pacific Northwest, but just it's very enjoyable to see these things happen and just appreciate them. And I think that appreciation makes them happen more. It encourages them. And also it tunes your vision to your physical vision to see what's around you. So yeah, there was this little white feather sitting there on the ground as I'm thinking about feathers as omens. And I almost left it. And then voice in my head said, oh, come on. It's we're giving you this sign. Just put it in your car, you know, to enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I could add to that quickly, though.
Sure. Yeah.
Other thing. Same situation with the deceased sister of my husband's cousin, cousin's wife. They were actually standing in their kitchen, small kitchen, you know. Same type of thing, though. No birds around. I mean, if the birds were around, they were outside. But right. They were standing right by the sink. And then what came floating down from the ceiling was a very small blue feather.
Wow.
I don't know how big it was, but I suspect it was probably the size of a quarter, the way she described it. But they were just standing there talking. Then all of a sudden, this thing starts to just float right down. And they don't have any birds in the house or anything like that. And even if they did outside, someone would say, well, maybe they dragged it in under accidentally under their shoe or something.
No, it floated down.
It did. It came down from the ceiling and floated down. So there's no way it got kicked up and then floated down. It was, they just stood there and she put out her hand, she said, and it landed right in her hand. Now, my sister, she went to the grocery store. And, you know, we notice coins and stuff like that always on the ground. Not always are they being thrown there. But anyway, when she came back out, there was a pheasant feather that was right in front of the door of her car that was not there before. And my dad was big into pheasant hunting. So wow. She took that as a sign that he was, because she thinks about him all the time, you know, and she's there. But these are the types of things that, you know, people do wonder about and are puzzled about. Coins, by the way, now that you mention, if it's tails up, I suppose you don't want to pick it up, right? If that's supposed to be bad luck, right?
Well, I've gone with what's the average been? How many years did I spend believing that any penny on the ground was good luck?
Yeah.
And so I go with that. I wanted to mention a couple other signs since you're mentioning the father and the peasant yeah. feather.
Yes.
My dad died when I was 23, but I think of him often, of course, and I was thinking about him at our other house, our previous house, and as I was thinking about him, this little music box started up, the kind that, you know, you'll open it and the music starts.
Yes.
And it just kind of started up by itself and played just a few notes. And when things like that happen, again, I really believe that if you acknowledge them, you are tuning yourself to them more, so those things can occur more. And so I just said, hi, Dad. And another time, I play Celtic harp, and another time, just, you know, a little playing on the note of the harp, and none of the animals were around. There was no temperature change, nothing that would account for it. Mm-hmm. But I'd been thinking about him. And as I mentioned, my family had a music store. So mm-hmm. he was not a musician, but musical instruments would be a very logical way for him to communicate. We'll see. I've got one hanging on the wall. We'll see if anything happens. Mm-hmm. When you talk about signs, and we talked about precognition, I wanted to tell a short story about what happened on Christmas, because my husband also has many gifts. He's had paranormal encounters of various kinds that are his stories to tell, but this was a shared experience. We've had a few shared experiences. Mm-hmm. I know you've had Peter Messerschmidt and Sarah Nash on your show, and they're our best friends. They live in Port Townsend, which is about 45 minutes away.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless them. They've adopted us as family for holidays. So we spent Christmas with them, and we were coming back, starting our drive back, and my husband, all of a sudden, he was driving the big pickup truck, and all of a sudden got really disoriented and had to pull over and just stop for 5 minutes. And I mean, I've never seen him so disoriented. And after we stopped, he said, yeah, it looked like the trees, this is driving through the forest, looks like the trees were just horizontal. I couldn't drive. I couldn't do anything. And he asked me to take over driving. And I did. And so it had delayed us maybe 5 or 6 minutes. And further on down, as we got closer to our home, we saw some lights stopped in the roadway, and there was a huge tree that had fallen this way across the roadway. Had he been driving, I would have been in the passenger seat and probably would have been killed. This was a very large tree, like 120 feet tall, that just completely fell across the roadway. And what's interesting about that also is there were forces at play protecting us. Nobody got hurt by that tree, but specifically protecting us. That was Christmas Day. On Christmas Eve, my sister and her husband had a nice little candlelit dinner in front of the fireplace, just the two of them. And she told me that she had experienced as if the lights had gotten bright and dim and bright and dim 3 or 4 times in a row. Mm-hmm. And so her vision, it's a sign through the vision, physical vision. Something had happened with her vision on Christmas Eve, and very disruptive. Someone else connected to Sarah and Peter and to me had been going home around that same time and had just had kind of you're falling asleep, you just have images come through your mind mm-hmm. about falling trees. So this kind of precognition or sign, sometimes I have trouble labeling things, but it's an experience that is pretty darn common.
This program here is not to confuse anybody about whether or not your belief system, especially if you're very religious, I grew up religious, and everything was about angels and demons and stuff like that. But then as I evolved, and I'm not sure as you were evolving too, or maybe many of us evolved, if all of a sudden your ideas about that started to wander off or change just based on your analysis or of what actually occurred and what we believe might have stepped in to intervene. And so I'm on a big mission when things happen to try. I can't ever get it 100%, but it's like, I don't think this did it, and maybe this did it. I don't know. What are your thoughts about that?
Great question. But part of it is, I think what we're brought up with creates our paradigm and our system of symbols through which we interpret the world.
Correct.
So, you know, it sounds like we were both raised in, I don't know, I was raised in Methodist church. So there was that frame of reference. Mm-hmm. Angels weren't so much a part of it, but as I think about it, they were in the hymns, but not so much iconography. I was born in 1958. So, you know, when the whole hippie thing was happening, I was a young preteen and then teenager. So at some point I got it, you know, got my Rider-Waite tarot deck and also another sort of hippy dippy deck that was called Morgan's Tarot, and it's really oracle cards, and I still have that. So I started exploring, and I guess I have a lot of overlapping systems, and I don't worry about defining or restricting myself. I've got a little assemblage over here, and I've got, let's see, I'm looking at Archangel Michael and Ganesh, and there's the triple goddess moon and the green man and various crystals and stones. I've got a piece of organite in a pyramid shape with the eightfold path on it. So there's a whole lot mixed together. Yeah. And I do believe that I work. This sounds so crazy. I suspend your disbelief, because when I hear these words come out, I think, well, that sounds pretty woo, but it's my reality. I do call on a group of archangels. Michael, he organizes things. Gabriel, I will ask. I don't ask. I kind of delegate. Sarah Nash finds that hilarious. I don't pray to them. I send them on jobs. Mm-hmm. So Gabriel for whispering perfect knowledge into people's ears, Raphael for health, and Shamuel, who is really good with animals and lost things. And here in rural Washington, people lose animals. And so, yeah, I'll send them out to take care of things. And I don't have as much a religious approach to them as just, you know, they're my guys. We had a big boat, 160-year-old wooden boat, and it sunk. And my husband had tried everything he could to bring it up. And certainly his efforts eventually were going to pay off. But one day I just said, okay, guys, go out, angels, go out, take care of this. Just tell him what he needs to know to do it. You guys just take care of it. And that thing was up the next day. It had been sunken and trying to be raised for 3 months. Mm-hmm. So,
I can.
I don't think it matters what you ascribe things to. Whatever makes you feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. And if someone else attributes something to a figure in a belief system that doesn't work for you, I would say if you can, for me, it's useful to just filter and take from the experience what works for me.
Mm-hmm. Lorna had shown me or presented something to me that is actually quite interesting. And I want you to kind of tell the story of it a little bit and then lead into it and maybe read that piece that you showed me.
So this is about the dream that came true?
Yeah.
So as I mentioned before, my granny lived in the wheatlands of eastern New Mexico. And she and my grandfather were wheat farmers. Turns out I have wheat farmers on both sides of my family. I can't grow a thing, but that's okay. So this occurred in probably 1919. I'm looking at the paper right here. Mm-hmm. My mother, their daughter, was born in 1917. And so, yeah, so they were wheat farmers. And my granny also was, as many women were, a healer. She would tend to people. She was a midwife, and also deeply religious. I count my forebears who've been deeply religious. I count them as mystics because it is a kind of mysticism. Mm-hmm. And especially in small towns, your relationship with your higher power, with God, whatever, it tends off into mysticism. So she was always very psychic, telepathic, as was my mother. In later years, my mother would be in their little house in Texas and know when her father-in-law was coming. He was a circuit preacher of different sorts of things people did to try to put together a living. And she would know when he was coming, and she'd clean the house and put fresh sheets out for him. Mm-hmm. So that was my mom. This story I'd like to share, I think I just want to read it because the details are kind of charming. And this was written by my grandmother sometime after 1962, mm-hmm. from the town that she lived in at that time. But it occurred in 1919. The woman that's referred to, the doctor's wife, name of Ida Hale, died in 1919. Okay. So again, my mother would have been about two.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll just go ahead and read. A dream that came true. Our family doctor and wife had lunch with us on a Sunday, and they told us that they were going to Hereford, Texas the next day to pay off a note on their registered Hereford cows. They came by our home and honked the next morning, and in the evening they came back and they honked. They had bought a new car. That night I had a dream about Ida, the wife, that disturbed me very much. I woke up and was tossing, and it woke my husband. He asked me what was the matter. I told him my dream. I dreamed I was at her house, and she was a naked, helpless baby laying over my shoulder, and I was going to wash and dress her as I had done for so many of my friends at childbirth. He told me not to let a superstitious dream disturb me. The morning came, and I told my husband that I would like to have my buggy horse that he was going to work in the field. He said, okay, I'll work until noon, and then you can go in the afternoon. While he was harnessing the horses, a boy came across the pasture bearing a note from his mother saying Mrs. Hale had a stroke last night, and if I was going down there to come by, and she would go with me. I went ahead that morning and washed clothes, and while I was at the cistern drawing water, a pure white pigeon came and landed on my shoulder. I'm getting goosebumps.
I know.
There were none of any kind for miles around. She stayed with us until she died and was constantly with my baby girl. They understood each other and played together like two kids. When I arrived at the home, Ida was unconscious and died that night, and I helped prepare her for burial. I have always thought of a white dove as some kind of omen. Mrs. Mabel Sims, Broadview, New Mexico.
Yeah, interesting. So what do you make out of all that?
I make out of it that she was deeply psychic, that she knew things. There's precognition in there, but mostly that clearly she had prophetic dreams. And yeah, a lot of experiences like that in her life and in my mom, just telepathy, precognition. But the symbolism of the white dove coming down, you know, what does that represent? I don't know. It's a white dove that came down. It was really cool. It was rare and it stayed there. And it happened while these other events were occurring, where this woman was in the process of leaving her physical body.
Mm-hmm.
So
I know somebody who had a white dove experience. I think it was her nephew. I can't remember if he got killed or passed away from something or whatever, but they were leaving, I think she was saying, the funeral home, I think, and this white dove came out of nowhere and landed on the hood of her car. My grandparents, who were born in the 1800s or whatever and lived long lives or whatever, they used to believe in touch doctors. And so, yeah, and the thing about that, which struck me about some of the information that Lorna had sent me, was that, you know, they lived on a rural property that did not have any kind of, still used an outhouse, and the electricity was, you know, very weak and all this sort of thing. And maybe they might have just been cheap, who knows, you know, or tight and pinched every penny back then, because back then you had to pinch your pennies. But my grandmother once told me about how they always used to go and use a touch doctor, and then give a contribution or a donation, to try to help them with their ailments. What's the association? I cannot recall right offhand. Is it with Miss Dr. Swain or Mr. Swain? When you brought up this touching kind of thing.
The healing?
Yeah.
So first I want to preface it, and I can talk a little more about this later, but one of my skills, and it's a skill because I've been taught it and developed it, is therapeutic touch, which is energy... energy healing. It can be actually touching or not. We can talk more about that later. But as part of my look back at my ancestors, my great-grandfather, Abner Swain, went by initials A.C. Swain, has a very interesting story. He was a farmer in Missouri. And again, there's a little backstory to this, but let me tell you the basic story first. He was a farmer in Missouri in about 1899, and he was living with his second wife, and he'd gone to Arkansas to look at another farm, and she had been ill for months, and he was told to come back. She had what they referred to as catarrh of the stomach, and I got all this from newspaper articles that I read. Catarrh of the stomach. She'd been almost unable to eat almost anything for about 3 months. She was almost dying. And he, as a last ray of hope, took her to Nevada, Missouri. There's a fellow there by the name of Sidney Weltmer who had started this school of magnetic healing, therapeutic healing. And reading back, it looks like it's a combination of touch healing and hypnosis. Yeah. But whatever, he had tremendous results, this Weltmer fellow. They'd call each other professor. It was kind of bandied about, Professor Weltmer. So he would heal people at his institute in Nevada, Missouri, and then also teach people to become practitioners. And that's, I mean, that's what folks do today with their webinars that you sell and things. So this was, as I said, in 1899. And they paid for 7 sessions. He cured this was my great-grandfather's second wife. He cured her. My great-grandfather took the 7th treatment, and that cured him of rheumatism. And they came back to their town of Warrensburg, Missouri, and studied to become healers in this way and opened their own institute, the Warrensburg Institute of Magnetic Healing. And there are all kinds of articles in the paper with paid, you know, probably paid articles, but with testimonials. So, yeah, it was very definitely she experienced miraculous healing. And then they went on to develop these skills within themselves. Mm-hmm. And if I can go ahead and give a little of the backstory. I've heard in other conversations you've had with folks talking about how trauma can sort of be a precursor to our gifts flowering.
Yeah.
And my great-grandfather had lived in North Dakota. He was, from the accounts I've read, one of the most prosperous farmers in his county, and which was Eddy County. And he'd hired, this was 1896, 1895, he'd hired a man named Frank Addison to come work on the farm. And my great-grandfather had gone off, you know, he needed to do other things, try and acquire more property. And apparently Addison had really manipulated, he sounded like an evil son of a gun. He manipulated my great-grandmother, this was my actual great-grandmother, and she'd become obsessed with him, probably very psychologically manipulated. He would walk around, this Frank Addison, with a bottle of poison in one pocket, pistol in the other. And it was known that they were trying to elope. At that time, my great-grandfather put the farm up for sale, claiming ill health. But I think that things were so horrible with this man, he was trying to just remove the whole family, the 4 kids, the wife, and everything. But what ended up happening is my great-grandmother and this Frank Addison eloped to Valley City, Missouri, checked into the Kindred Hotel, drank prussic acid. Well, before they did that, they wrote a note saying something like separated in life, united in love, or united in death, and drank prussic acid and died. So this is what I keep trying to say, my husband is my great-grandfather. I'm clear they're not the same person. My great-grandfather was dealing with, he'd been trying to get out of the farm to move the family away. He had these 4 kids, and his wife does this insane thing. And the newspapers, you think social media is bad. This was all over the papers.
I know.
And the moral tale up to New York. It was in New York papers. So that may have informed his desire to, you know, find something more powerful, something better, some sort of way to assuage his damaged soul.
Yeah. One of the things that that I wanted to ask you about is, how did you get into making these, and how do you construct them in a way where they seem to, because you picked the right one for me.
I encounter so many people that say, I have a pendulum, but it doesn't work for me. And all that I'm going to say right now is my opinion. I feel very sure of my opinion, but it's my opinion. My strong opinion is there is no right and no wrong way. And when people are finding their pendulum doesn't work, it may be because they are trying to do it in a way that they've been told it has to be done. So for some folks, it's very powerful to have it over your palm. But is that necessary? Do you have to do that? Should you do that? No. If it works for you, then it works for you. The same with the motion of the pendulum. Mm-hmm. Some people say, oh, yeah, yeah, I know how they work. It goes forward and backward for yes, side to side for no. Okay. In my opinion, what you do when you get a pendulum from anybody, from me, anybody, you cleanse it, and that can be in water. Our tap water in the bathroom, it comes from a well, so it's not very spiritual to rinse your pendulum in the bathroom, but that water is coming from the center of the earth, or from, not the center of the earth, it's coming from the earth. So to me, it's a spiritual thing. I bring awareness to it. You can cleanse a pendulum through smoke or with energy of your hands, or anything you want, sunlight, moonlight, doesn't matter. So kind of reset it. You're rebooting it.
Yeah.
And then you ask it some question that you know the answer to is yes. Do it for me. Do I live in Washington State? Yes. And whatever it does, it tells me yes. And for me, that's a clockwise circle. Mm-hmm. And then you ask it a question for which the answer is no. Some people say, you could say to your pendulum, show me a no. I like to use a question instead. And you have to be careful. Do I have three cats? Well, I don't know. I have two physical. Maybe I have a third one somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's something that you know the answer is no, and see what it does. For me, back, forward and back is no. For many folks, that's yes. Mm-hmm. If my question is too vague, or it doesn't know, or it doesn't want to answer, or it doesn't really have an opinion, it'll do kind of nothing.
Mm-hmm. So the question is why is it then that one day it goes this way for yes, and then the next day it goes this way for yes? Why does it change direction and its mind? Because I've had that happen. It's like, no, that's mm-hmm. no. But do you know what the answer is to that? Why would it change direction?
That's interesting. I've never thought about that. And what I would say is that you know yourself well enough to know that you have to reset or reset yourself with your pendulum every time you use it. And that's brilliant. I think that's a terrific idea. I'm going to remember that and share that with people.
Yeah, it just seems so bizarre.
The same reason you might have a different feeling in your body. One day you might feel energetic, the other not. You might feel like wearing shoes with heels versus not, hair up, hair down. Just different energy. And it's, like I said, it's great that you know that about yourself.
And then
sorry,
how,
I'm kicking my table here.
Then how is it then that, someone might ask this question just generally, will I get the, and you got to be specific too, by the way, very, very specific. Will I get, but what exactly is it picking up on that has the ability to move it?
You know, I don't know. It could be the knowledge, the great knowledge of the ether. My husband says the gifts of God are all around us. We just have to bend down and pick them up. So there are people who believe that all the knowledge of the universe, of everything that has ever happened and will ever happen, is presently with us. We just, it's like seeing different light frequencies. We may not know how to access it. So this may be a tool to access that. It sometimes people use it instead of muscle testing for vitamins or different things. So then it's accessing the knowledge of our bodies. It might be accessing our subconscious. So probably, I guess my answer would be, it depends on the situation. Mm-hmm. And when you ask it a question, though, it's really good to focus your question on what is really essential. Break it down into pieces. So will I get that executive job in Milwaukee or something?
Right.
You know, break it way down. Like, what is it that you want? Do you want to change jobs? So you might ask, is it in my best interest, in my highest good right now, to be looking for another job, or to be, you know, ask one thing at a time, but you might ask to be changing jobs and then progress out from that point. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when people feel their pendulum isn't working, it might be the nature of the question. It may be too broad, It may be none of your business, so mm-hmm. it's not helpful for you to know at this time. Mm-hmm. But quite often it's because the question is too broad or unfocused.
Yeah, and so on that note, I am going to have you tell everyone how they can find you.
Okay, so I share the social media and Etsy presence with my husband, who's an artist. So to get to our Etsy site, you can go to Joyful Pendulums, that's PENDULUMS, joyfulpendulums.com. That'll get you to the Etsy site. And I've put my pendulums up at the top of all the different sections so you can find them easily. Mm-hmm. On Facebook, we are, our page is Joyful Pendulums and Iron Bear Marine, iron like the metal, bear like the animal, marine like the soldier, yep. mariner.
Yep.
But if you just put in Joyful Pendulums, you can find me. I also have a personal page. You're welcome to find me there. Email is joyfulpendulums@JPSeattle.net. And I'm happy to talk with people by email.
On that note, thank you so very much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Kelly. Take care.